The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.
Hi, I'm Matt Lieb.
And I'm Vince Mancini.
And this is Pod Yourself a Gun. A Sopranos podcast where Vince Mancini and I and a guest watch every single episode of The Sopranos and talk about it. I'm very excited about this episode, not just because it is one of the rare bad episodes of The Sopranos, but because our guest is LA comedian and homie of homies, Carl Hess is on the show. How you doing, Carl?
Great to be here, guys. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for coming on. You might know Carl from his food podcast, Yelling About Pate, or his he did a cooking channel show called Food Fact or Fiction. And now his credits will include Pod Yourself a Gun, the world's only best Sopranos podcast.
Do you guys?
You can do a whole. You could do a whole Sopranos podcast about just the food, really.
Oh, yeah. Honestly, I was thinking about that. I was like, in this episode in particular, they talked about some sort of rigotte pie.
Yeah, and the tripe and tomatoes.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I was thinking to myself, I was like, you know what? We could just talk about the food. And by we, I mean maybe you and Vince could. I don't know shit about food.
I did a, I did a two Sopranos-themed cooking challenges, I think, for Up Rocks. I made the squid ink and mussel pasta from the Italy episode.
Oh yeah!
Oh yeah! Yeah.
Yes.
And I think
did you ever?
Yeah.
Did you make gabagool?
No, you don't really have to make gabagool. You can just buy it.
Did you make the gabagool?
Yeah.
You just get gabagool.
Yeah.
You get gabagool. Where do you get gabagool?
At Satriali's pork store.
Pork
I think.
Store.
Yeah.
You gotta get gabagool at the grocery store. Sorry. So fucking dumb. All right, before we get into the podcast, we first must do what we always do and play the Pod Yourself a Gun theme song. Pod. 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 Podcast. Pod. 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 Podcast. All right.
Why is it so funny? It shouldn't be that funny, but it is.
I don't understand the mechanics of why it's funny anymore because I've heard it so many times, but every time.
Well, as a first timer, let me tell you, really hit the spot.
Hey, yeah, it's a real nice theme song. It'd be a shame if someone would have come along and parody it.
It'd be a shame
if someone would have do a low energy voiceover over this very nice theme song for comedic effect.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, today on Pod Yourself a Gun, we are talking about the episode Full Leather Jacket, Season 2, Episode 8. And here is a brief synopsis that we got
Richie
from...
Although Richie is miffed at Tony for forcing him to build a ramp for the pizza parlor owner he paralyzed, he decides to make a peace offering. Unhappy with their lowly status as Christopher's lackeys, Sean and Matt decide to pledge their allegiance to Richie through a violent, unexpected act.
All right. And so that's the HBO Go synopsis. But let's get a little bit of context. Where were we in America when this episode came out? That's right. It's time to take a trip back to the Wayback
Machine.
That's
right. I'm glad that you asked for the cultural context, Matt, because I have it. We're going all the way back to March 5th, 2000, the year.
A simpler time.
A simpler time. Some of the headlines that you may remember from that day in history. Tiger Woods overtook Michael Jordan as the world's highest paid athlete.
Nice. Congrats. Yeah. Congrats to Tiger, dude. He was on top of the world back then.
Top of the world.
Tiger Woods.
Dude, his dad was happy. His dad stopped hitting him or whatever happened. He was probably fucking many girls and no one was giving a shit about
it. He's like, there's no way I'll ever get my comeuppance.
Yeah, exactly. He's like, I can do Percocet and no one will care.
this ride's never going bad.
Woods, 24, took home $47 million last year, up 75% from 1998, according to Forbes. Jordan, whose 1998 retirement forced him to get by on just his endorsement cash last year, earned only $40 million, according to Forbes, which published a list of the top earnings in sports and entertainment. Other news, this one really hurts me to read. Voters seem to choose Bush, Gore in primaries. Subhead, Americans are largely content with the nation's direction.
Cool.
Oh, God. Oh, Jesus.
And that direction is straight into 9/11. And you really gotta love just like the before time of any period before something happens is always the most funny.
Right. It's adorable almost.
It is cute. I was actually watching a news clip from like, I think it was like March 1st or something. And it was like the CBS like nightly news. And on the docket, it was just like multiple things. It was like the primaries are happening. And coronavirus is hurting this one particular country, China.
Right.
What will happen to the stock market there? And then the next story was a dog running for mayor.
What?
Straight up. And I was just like, this was like a month ago. A month ago, we were like, we got to put dog mayor up top in the docket. People got to know. And now... Look at us.
Yeah, right. And that Bush Gore primary was our dog mayoral.
That was our dog mayor.
Yeah.
In fact, we had dog president for a while, and then we had the Iraq War.
This is a nice little hubris you got here. Be a shame if it, you know, came before a fall.
Yeah, be a shame if there was a nation-shattering event that would spoil this.
Other headlines, also from the St. Louis Dispatch. FBI calls Christian Identity the nation's most dangerous hate group.
Oh, that's fun. It's fun because they are still the nation's most dangerous hate group.
Yeah, well, we're going to catch up to them any second now.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Very soon we'll topple that. But yeah, then, of course, not long after that, it was Islam is the worst. And
sure.
And now it's just no one's focusing on Christian identity now, or white identity.
You know, it's the microbiomes that are the real terrorists.
Yeah, exactly. It's just, it's white people have an extra muscle in their calf that makes them hate brown people.
The top movies were The Whole Nine Yards, The Next Best Thing, that's a new movie, and... Could you guys remember who starred in The Next Best Thing by any chance?
No idea.
No idea.
That would be Rupert Everett and Madonna.
Oh, of course. That classic.
Yeah.
Ugh.
Two best friends, one a straight woman, Abby, the other a gay man, Robert, have decided to have a child together. 5 years later, Abby falls in love with a heterosexual man and wants to move away with him and Robert's little boy, and a nasty custody battle ensues. That sounds like a Marriage Story before a Marriage Story. But with, you know, a little bit of a...
Yeah, it's Marriage Story with Madonna. If you didn't think I could hate Marriage Story anymore, add fucking Madonna.
Yeah. Maron!
Maron!
Oh! Show Monarch. No respect over here.
Third movie was My Dog Skip. Fourth movie was Drowning Mona, which I'm going to guess that you probably don't remember either.
I remember Drowning Mona had Danny DeVito in it and Will Ferrell.
It has Danny DeVito, Neve Campbell, Jamie Lee Curtis, and Bette Midler.
That's a nice Mona you got here. It'd be a real shame if, I don't know, someone with a holder under the water.
Hey, I'm drowning over here.
Oh, I'm drowning here.
Yep.
What are the top songs?
The top songs, the number one, whatever you call it, the pop charts, is Amazed by Lone Star.
No idea.
No idea.
Country song, I guess. On the alternative charts, there was The Other Side by Red Hot Chili Peppers.
Oh, hell yeah.
Okay.
How long? Great, yeah, that great song jam. Ruled, dude.
Mm-hmm. Great jam.
My dogs are barking outside. I don't know why. And then in the UK, the number one song was American Pie by Madonna again.
Madonna!
Whoa! Yeah.
That's crazy.
So that's the Wayback Machine.
That's the Wayback Machine. That's where we were in America. We were just listening to Madonna. We were content with the direction of America. We were ready for anything that would come next. No, we were not. So let's get into this episode. Speaking of what comes next, we're talking about the episode from season 2, episode 8, Full Leather Jacket. And real quick, I'm just going to run down our Bada B stories. All right. So we got Richie wants to give Tony a jacket. Meadow wants to go to Berkeley. Carm wants a letter of recommendation to Georgetown for Meadow. Matt and Sean want respect. Chris wants to marry Adriana. And Tony wants Richie to build a ramp for Beansy. So I'm going to start off this with a quick question as it pertains to the jacket storyline. and I'm going to do it in my best Jerry Seinfeld voice. What's the deal with this B story? Because it is this episode, and I know I kind of did it up top by calling it the worst episode, but this to me is a strangely bad episode of The Sopranos. I've rewatched this show tons of times, and I didn't totally, I remember this episode vaguely, but it's just not a memorable episode. It's an episode where...
I'm going to disagree with you on that.
Oh, all right. You enjoyed this episode.
Well, I mean, it's not the best episode, but there's things that are, momentous. It's Chrissy, asked her to get married. That's a big step forward in that story. Chrissy getting shot, obviously the repercussions will, spread out from that in a myriad of ways.
I think it
might not be the best episode, but I don't think it's forgettable.
I think we call this, I called this a rebuilding episode in that it sets up a lot of storylines, but I do not enjoy it on its own, and it feels almost like the Modern Family writing staff was like, hey, what if we wrote an episode of The Sopranos? It's got all the very sitcom-y storylines.
Sure.
It did feel super sitcom-y to me. In fact, I pulled some audio from the scene where Richie tries to give Tony the jacket.
I actually like this scene.
It's a great scene. And I just, it's 1 minute of audio, and I have it, I just recorded it straight up. There's nothing different about it. It's exactly what happens. So go ahead.
This is exactly what happens in the episode.
I got something for you. What's this?
What's this? It's the jacket.
The jacket. I took off Rocco DeMeo.
Oh, yeah.
Cocksucker had the toughest reputation in Essex County, but he never came back after I got through with him.
He later died of Alzheimer's.
He even sounds like the old guy in Del Boca Vista.
Yeah, I know.
Jack, what's his name? Jack?
Yeah. He sounds like, the pen!
The pen, Jerry, this is the astronauts use this.
My kid brother, you would have killed for this jacket. So it's lining, fine Corinthian leather. Nobody believed with my size I could carry this jacket. But with the belt, it was like Rommel.
I love it. Was like Rommel.
It's a beautiful jacket. But it's yours to have.
Why?
I gotta let go of the past. Like the tower says, you gotta shut one door before another one can open.
Thanks.
I love everything about that clip. I love everything. First of all, do you know how long it took me to make that goddamn clip?
and you know what? It was worth it. It was worth every second of it.
It was absolutely worth every second. I'm sure now we're gonna double our listenership just from that clip alone. but just the scene itself, but not just the scene, the storyline of the jacket, to me, reads is the most sitcom-y I think the show's ever gotten. Like, the only thing that wasn't sitcom-y about it was that there was no follow-up after Richie sees the jacket on, on one of his maids. Like, he sees the jacket, and then he just gets mad, but there's no follow-up about it whatsoever. If this were Curb Your Enthusiasm, he would have confronted him, and that's where the comedy is. But in general, it was like every scene with Richie, other than them talking about him building Beansy a ramp, it was just like, this jacket, what a great jacket.
Yeah.
Where's the jacket? It literally was the guy from Del Boca Vista saying, this pen.
Well, the jacket.
No, it's like, I kept expecting there to be some element of menace in there. Like, you got the feeling that something bad was going to happen with his jacket, but then by the end it's like, oh no, he's basically just like the Kenny Banya of this episode.
Yeah. There was no, you expect, like, what is he giving up by taking this gift from Richie?
Yeah.
Like, you're trying to see what his motive is, because up until this point, his motives have never been anything other than sinister.
Right.
Like, He's up until this point, you know, everything he's done is to spit in the face of kind of like the new order where Tony is the head of New York or of New Jersey.
Yeah, you think he's fucking with him or something. And then it's like, oh, no, he just wanted him to wear this jacket, I guess.
Yeah, I think he honestly thought that this jacket, that this gift was going to impress Tony in some way. It was strange because it just kind of felt out of character for him. And even the thing with... Oh, go ahead.
I think it was like illustrative of like his mindset is in the old way.
Yeah.
Back in the day, this would have been like, oh, a gesture. Like, this is a big deal. But like, he hasn't come around to the new way of thinking, and he's clearly incapable of doing it.
It's just a weird way to illustrate that, because it's like, oh, yeah, this guy definitely wants to wear a 30-year-old jacket.
Right.
Yeah. It's like, it, because of the sentimental value for Richie does not meet the sentimental value for Tony. Like, Tony is like, I barely remember this. I think I kind of remember it. Sure, I'll take the jacket. But, and part of me goes like, I think the fact that Richie brought up this jacket, this gift, every time that he and Tony had a scene together, I think that spurred Tony to like just give it away to someone else. But at the same time, Tony would have like wanted him to see someone else wearing the jacket, so I don't think he could have actually like engineered it so that he was there at the exact time that his maid was there. It felt super Curb. It felt very Curb Your Enthusiasm.
I did appreciate the cultural reference of Corinthian leather.
Yeah.
I don't know. I have the origin of Corinthian leather. If you've never,
I don't know anything about Corinthian leather. Tell me about it.
Well, I'll just let you hear it.
Pride, very cornerstone of a new automobile. Cordoba, the new small Chrysler. Here is the warmth of thickly cushioned contour seats, available even in fine Corinthian leather. So very luxurious, yet surprisingly affordable. Cordoba is engineered with great pride. Be a Chrysler.
It's the Ricardo Montalban commercial for the Chrysler
Cordoba.
That was
the sexiest car ad ever.
Yeah. Why is my dick hard?
Yeah, why am I fucking turned on right now?
Why am I coming? No.
And the leather was manufactured in Jersey. So I don't know if it would be like a Jersey thing
Yeah, it could be
the
like
best kind of leather.
Yeah. We got the best cows. We make the best leather. We went to the best tannery.
It was just like, it was one of those storylines that I think in any other episode with, not with Richie, like if it had been like fucking, I don't know, if it had been Matthew Bevilacqua,
yeah,
that gave it, or like someone who's like less, I don't know, less important and has less of a defined character. It'd be an interesting way to define a character, but instead it felt kind of like, I don't know, it was weird to me. To me, it was like strange. Don't get me wrong. When I shit on this episode, I am not saying this is a bad episode of television.
Right. It's coming from a place of love.
It comes from a place of love.
Sure.
I absolutely love The Sopranos. I mean, like even their worst episodes are better than most TV shows' entire runs. So... It was a fine episode compared to television in general.
Sure.
For The Sopranos, I just thought like, yeah, it just kind of felt like it was all set up. It was set up for a lot of different things. And
yeah.
And you didn't really.
It's just that storyline is weird because you expect there to be an ulterior motive. And it
totally.
Just kind of never comes. And you're like, wait, what was he just? He really just wanted to give him a jacket? What the fuck?
Especially given that the other storyline with Richie at this point is that he beat a man so bad and ran him over with his car that the dude is paralyzed now and cannot walk. And as a gesture, they're like, can you please make his home, I don't know, ADA compliant?
I love when Paulie and Silvio come in the beginning and they sit down with Richie. And then, like, he's like, are you kidding me? And Paul is just like, you're going to fucking build that ramp.
You're going to fucking build the ramp.
You're going to fucking build that ramp.
Which he then says something that I think, Vince, you had a question about, which was, quote, I'll build a ramp up to your ass. Drive a Lionel up there.
Yeah, what does that mean?
No idea.
I think that's a like a brand of 18-wheeler, like tractor trailer.
Oh.
Or maybe it's a train. Maybe it's a train, a Lionel.
That sounds right. It would make sense. You know, being that, I mean, like a ramp would be something that a truck drives.
Maybe
up.
It's a car. I don't know.
Oh yeah,
could be a car.
I just Googled it, and it's a model train.
It's a model train.
Yeah, Lionel model trains.
Well, there we go.
Right. Yeah. Okay.
I like that. That's interesting because it's not a full size train. It's like he specifically made it anatomically possible.
It's something you could actually cram in someone's ass.
Exactly. It's like you actually could get a model train in someone's asshole. That does seem that seems right. Which, by the way,
you definitely can. Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah, it's definitely possible. You definitely get that in there.
All right. Well, what, Vince, have you tried to stick a lie in it?
No,
just believe me.
Trust me. You could definitely get it in there.
You could get a whole blue comet up there. Hey, that's another train reference. Remember from later in the series. Which it leads me to believe the fact that it's this is like a model train, very specifically. There's one writer or someone, one producer on The Sopranos who really loves model trains.
Hey, you know, you got a real nice asshole here. Be a real shame. I'm just saying.
Be a real
one
shame.
One would construct a ramp. I don't know. I just spitballing here.
I think did they have a British writer? Because like that would be a tell. Because the British,
they do like trains.
They love old timey trains for whatever reason.
There's a lot of model train content in Sopranos as a show too. So.
Yeah, it's definitely a model train heavy series. Which is, you know, hey, neither here nor there. I think I'm ambivalent on model trains personally, but I certainly like it as a detail in someone's, you know, backstory.
Sure.
Yeah.
That's definitely my least favorite B story. What do we think about, you know, Carmela wanting Meadow not to go to Berkeley?
Okay, so this is I think my favorite B story in the entire series. In the entire episode. Excuse me.
Okay, I was like, no, wow. Whoa. You love this Berkeley drama.
There was a lot of, you know, there were some interesting stories going on, but this one I liked a lot just because every episode or maybe every other episode of The Sopranos fits into a theme, which is a segment we have called Da Real Gangsta, in which you find out who Da Real Gangsta is, because it's never Tony. Tony is never Da Real Gangsta. It's always like capitalism or the banks or whatever.
Right.
And in this case, Da Real Gangsta is the academia industrial complex and
exactly, and
helicopter parents. So
right.
Because this is, I think, the
podcasting.
First. This is someone asking you, "What are you doing in there,
Carl? Why are you yelling about? Why are you yelling in an Italian voice? I'm podcasting. All right.
What the fuck is going on?
Hey, I was
going
to let this go on over here.
Hey, I'm podcasting over here.
But yeah, they like this is Carmela at her most gangster wife. You know,
yeah,
like
definitely.
Like she's taking full advantage of the fact that she's a mob wife. So the show starts out, or this episode starts out with Meadow wanting to, or expressing the fact that she wants to go to Berkeley, and it being shot down by both Tony and Carmela. And I believe we have a clip of that.
Mm-hmm.
If I can get in there, that means I probably can get into Berkeley.
Over my dead body.
There are more Nobel Prize winners in the San Francisco Bay Area than anywhere on the planet.
Nobel Prize for what? Pack and fudge?
Oh!
I think
I got him!
The best part of that was just the look that Carmela gives after he says that.
Yeah. She doesn't say anything, but she gives a Tony.
Yeah. Oh, Tony.
Oh,
You're always saying such hateful things about gays at the table. Always doing hate speech.
You know who actually got the Nobel Prize for pack and fudge? It's the guy who founded Lionel Trains.
Oh, he got so much fudge on those little model trains. So stupid. This is then, you know, once it becomes clear that...
it's like you using gabagool to punctuate the worst joke.
It's like, hey, listen, no matter how many episodes of The Sopranos I watch, I for some reason can't remember but one or two different Italian bits of Italian slang,
or just you coming and yelling gabagool,
gabagool,
stugat,
ugat, bukak. But yeah,
sorry.
So Tony and Carm very much against Meadow going to Berkeley. For now, they don't actually get into the reasons why, but I think it's established later in the series that one of the reasons that they wouldn't want that is because of the fact that it's so far away. And
I thought that was fairly obvious. No,
I mean, I don't really think, no, they, not in this episode. They don't really say why.
Carm says like, oh, she's trying to run away from us. And Tony's like, yeah, of course. That's a job. She's a teenage girl. She wants to.
Right. But I mean, it does seem like, I mean, unless she went to whatever the closest college is, I guess it'd be like Rutgers or something. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, whether or not, certainly it is harder to get all the way to California than it is to get, you know, to, you know, somewhere else in New Jersey.
Sure.
But it also seems to me like it would maybe be a better tactic to just be like, well, the reason we don't want you going there is because it's so far and because we love you. Like, what if they just said that?
Are you saying that Carm and Tony could be better parents?
I'm saying maybe more emotionally available
and
you know, a little less manipulative. Instead, like, I don't think it's going to make Meadow feel like not going if you're just like, everyone there's gay. You know? Like, that's not going to work.
Well,
but
the way that conversation started was that they found out that Hunter was going to Reed. And Tony said, sayonara, which I didn't get at first because I was like, is that an Asian thing? But I think that is just because, like, Reed is also on the West Coast.
Is that where, because I didn't know where Reed is.
Yeah, it's in Oregon, I guess, which I didn't know.
Oh, all right.
But yeah.
So yeah, I assumed
that's the subtext there.
That could be the subtext there. It could also be, there's this thing where they believe for some reason that Hunter is a bad influence on Meadow. Mm-hmm. Like,
yeah, that's what I thought. Tony's like, hey, good riddance. Like,
good riddance.
Bye.
Yeah, they for some reason think Hunter. I love, by the way, that they think Hunter is a bad influence because they never, they never really like show Hunter doing anything wrong or bad. They just decided, just based on the way she looks or the way they hang out, they were just like, she's a bad apple. And yeah, but they don't like her, so they were like, sayonara. That was my guess. But yeah, then Carmela takes it upon herself to try to get Meadow into Georgetown, and the way that she decides to do that is try to get a letter of recommendation from Jeannie Cusimano, their neighbor, from Jeannie's sister, who is a high-powered attorney alumnus of Georgetown. And I thought the scene, first of all, I thought the scenes between Carmela and Jeannie were really great because you could tell, you know, they did a good job of like Jeannie really doesn't like living next to a mafioso, especially, you know, like the fucking king of New Jersey. And also there's a bit of it is that she's embarrassed. Not so much she's afraid, but she's also embarrassed that these like low lives are in her life at all. And so like her even talking to her sister about this, like she apologizes.
She's like, oh, I fucked up.
Yeah, and which is, it's an interesting theme overall in The Sopranos, which is that like there's two different types of like upwardly mobile Italian Americans.
Yeah, it's the politics of respectability.
Right, exactly. And it's like, you know, you're respectable if you're a doctor, a lawyer, a fucking, you know, professor. But if you're, you know, a mafioso, which I mean, I get it, but also you know, in terms of who I would rather have a, you know, go to dinner with, I'd much rather go to dinner with Tony and Carm than I would you know,
Dr. Melfi's family.
Dr. Melfi and her family. And God. So my favorite scene, I think, in this episode was when Carmela visits Jeannie's sister and threatens her.
With a ragout pie with pineapple. The best kind of threat.
It's a pretty great scene because it just like it shows her being like a helicopter parent, and also like you're a little bit afraid of like how far she's willing to take this.
I made you a pie. Okay,
I made you a fucking pie.
I made you a fucking ragout pie.
Yeah, enjoy the ragout.
Matt, do I need to translate ragout pie for you?
Ricotta.
Yeah, so it's basically like an Italian cheesecake.
Right. Oh, I didn't know.
So
that.
Good. So good.
Oh, that sounds amazing.
I've never made it. We never had it. I don't think I've ever had one, but sounds good.
I don't think I've ever had one with pineapple. I'm pretty sure she says pineapple.
Yeah.
A nice ragout pie. Ooh.
Yeah. Ooh. It sounds delicious. I mean, just because it's an Italian dessert, it sounds fucking amazing.
Sure.
But I had no idea what a ricotta pie was. But
me a ragout pie over a cannoli any day of the week.
Any day. I would take it. Sorry.
Did you know that most vitamin D3 supplements come from sheep's wool? I'm Kat, founder of Ritual. We're making traceability the new standard for the supplement industry. When I was pregnant, I couldn't find a multivitamin I could trust, so I created my own. Ours is made traceable, third-party tested, and clean label project certified. Oh, and our vitamin D3? It comes from sustainably harvested lichen from England, not sheep. Trace for yourself with 25% off at ritual.com/podcast.
The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search. Match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from Corient. Corient provides wealth management services centered around you. They focus on exceeding your expectations and simplifying your life. Corient has been helping high achievers just like you enjoy their lives more fully, preserve their wealth, and provide for the people, causes, and communities they care about. As one of the largest integrated fee-only registered investment advisors in the U.S., Corient has deeply experienced teams in 23 strategic locations. Corient has extensive knowledge spanning the full spectrum of planning, investing, lending, and money management disciplines. Leverage Corient's exclusive network of experts to craft custom solutions designed to help you reach your financial goals, no matter how complex they may be. Real wealth requires real solutions. For more information, connect with a wealth advisor today at Corient.com. That's Corient.com. Corient.com.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, excursions, and more in one place. There are over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from, so you can find something for everyone. And Viator offers free cancellation and 24/7 customer support for worry-free travel. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
But I ain't sucking no cream out of a tube over here.
Oh,
yeah. What, you think I'm a fucking Fanuc?
No, I'm gonna eat it from a pie like a real man.
A real man eats pies, not cannoli.
All right, we got the clip.
I thought you would at least want to take a look at her grades and her SAT scores and some teacher comments before you made up your mind. I think she would be a wonderful addition to the Georgetown campus.
Then I'm sure the admissions officers will see that.
Well, I'm not sure that's true. The sad fact is, that's just not enough these days.
I'm sorry, Carmella, but I can't do it.
I don't think you understand. I want you to write that letter.
Excuse me?
I said I want you to write the letter.
Are you threatening me?
What threatening? I brought you a regard pie and a high school transcript so you could write a letter of recommendation for my little daughter to Georgetown.
I'm an officer of the court.
A lawyer.
I really do enjoy that she goes, I'm an officer of the court. I'm an officer of the court, and then you're a lawyer.
A lawyer.
Yeah. An officer of the court is something that, like, a high-class person would call themselves.
Exactly. Hey,
yeah.
I'm an officer of the court. You're a lawyer.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, but that's, again, so, first of all, this whole storyline, once again, I feel like we're in an episode of fucking Home Improvement where the girl's playing her own twin sister. Like, that seems like something that's very much, like, fucking Al Borland would have to do.
Sure.
You know, but, and then if I squint, I can kind of enjoy the storyline with Carmella because, you know, the idea is that she sort of put aside her own hopes and dreams to marry Tony. And, you know, She's in this very repressed existence. And now, like, now that she wants one thing, she's like, well, I can, you know, she's borrowing some of her husband's extortionary tactics because
Like,
this is the one thing that she wants. But
right.
So like, I get that. But then when it manifests itself in the actress playing her own twin sister and like there's not like a scene.
Oh, I didn't get that.
There's not like a scene where it comes to a head, you know, like Carmella kind of leans on her, but she doesn't like that. We don't really understand the Cusimano chick's change of heart. Like she just kind of does it.
I mean, I thought it was fear, but you're right. It does kind of resolve in this way where it'd be like, you know, if I were the lawyer, I'd be like, what are they going to do? They're going to fucking kill me over a letter of recommendation? Right.
Well, that's like, what she says. And then, like, she has some sort of change of heart, but it's an off-screen change of heart.
Yeah. Right. I did particularly love the kind of subtle lib bashing that was going on, where it was like, I've already given my letter of recommendation to a sweet Puerto Rican boy. His mother was a crackhead. And it was just like, they were just like, poor thing, you know.
Right.
I thought that was very good.
By the way, do they still do letters of recommendation? Because, like, talk about completely fucking worthless practice. Like,
I don't know.
I mean, I had to get a letter of recommendation when I, like 10 years ago, tried to go back to school to be a teacher. I mean,
Matt asked me for one when I was coming on the podcast. I was actually really surprised. Yeah.
Well, I just
like, I've been on other podcasts. He's like, just send the letter.
Please send the letter of recommendation. And I would like to see your school transcripts from when you were a child.
I mean, like, I've had to get them, but they were always bullshit. Like, you ask some professor that you barely know. And you're like, hey, can you write this thing? And then they do, and it's like they just like write.
I mean, the
a
weird
bunch
thing
of
about it is
horseshit for you.
I also feel like, let's be honest, you could just fake one of those, right?
Right. Yeah.
Right.
You could just fake one. I could just write a letter from anyone. I mean, maybe not the president, but even then, how are you going to check up on that?
That and then like the college the admissions process, like the idea behind it is that they're trying to make it this meritocracy and not based on connections. And then they just like completely go back on themselves. Like, oh, also, in addition to the supposedly meritocratic grading system and standardized testing, could you also tell us who your cronies are, please?
Yeah, right.
Who's
the
real hypocrite here?
Yeah, it is. Again, the real gangster, academia-industrial complex.
There you go.
That's who it is. You know, they just, it's all about connections. That's all it's about.
It's about who you know, and, you know, Meadow knows how to make a rigotte pie.
I mean, and you know, it's kind of like, it's the two different worlds of who's in, the two different clubs in the two different worlds. You know, one has got like the ivory tower world, and the other is the, you know, the bottom.
Runs the street.
Yeah, they're almost like twin siblings, like the Cusimano twins, you know?
Sure.
So weird.
I mean, they're literally twins. But so I actually did not get that at all. That is just...
Neither did I. I totally missed that.
I missed that completely. The actress is playing her own twin sister?
Yes.
Yeah.
That's
funny.
Seems ridiculous.
The wig fooled me, clearly.
It did. It worked.
I mean, I know all Italians look the same to you guys, but...
They do. They all look very similar. It's a lot of big noses. Speaking of big noses, the next
great segue.
Character.
Great segue.
Yeah. Thank you. You know, I'm great at segues on the show. So the next storyline that we get into here is Matthew Bevilacqua and Sean Gismonti.
Gismonti?
Yeah, I think so. Gismonti.
Yeah. Sean Gismonti. And this is actually, it was not actually a good segue because of the fact that I have to somehow now get to when Richie Aprile is talking to them and talking shit about Chris.
Right.
But there's too much backstory to go on. So the big story here is that Matt and Sean are basically doing small time cat burglaring with Chris in order to make their way in the mafioso world.
Yeah.
Hey, Tony, how the fuck's it going?
How you doing?
Matt Drinkwater, the evil Bevilacqua's nephew, my partner, Sean Gismonti. Friends of Christopher, who work the executive car game.
Yeah, I know. How you doing?
That dancer, that's an out there. I like to break my dick off in that asses, huh?
See, I love that scene.
I love it.
In particular, because they want to relate to him. And one of the things they actually say is like, they're like, oh shit, Tony's here. Oh, we should have said hi or something. And then Sean goes, yeah, or at least ask him what time it is. Which is,
and then they use Banaka.
Yeah, just to me, I'm just like, yeah, because if, you know, him giving you the time, That's the same as like talking to him about anything. And then they go to the bathroom just to talk about how they'd like to fuck women.
I'd like to violently fuck her. Like, you know what I'm saying, right?
Yeah. I would like to fuck her so bad that I am horribly disfigured for the rest of my goddamn life.
My penis is injured for life.
Yeah,
I have no more penis. My dick in her ass. Like, if my dick just stayed in her ass forever.
And I would be okay with it.
It's kind of romantic.
That would be fine. That would be fine by me. I can't. I really got to work on my Italian accent. I am not good. Oh, not cool. Their entire storyline, up until this point, it actually is just kind of the same thing. They are kind of just like Tweedledee and Tweedledum. You know, they're going around. They always fuck up. You know, they always look like douchebags. They're always trying to get Tony's attention, and Tony always yells at them for trying.
I feel like this storyline, I like that these guys are stupid, but I feel like they went full Homer Simpson in this episode.
Yeah,
they did. Yeah. No, you're not wrong. It was like, there's a level of idiocy that they hadn't, like The Sopranos is good when they do idiots who are more subtle.
Yeah,
you know?
Like Polly Walnuts he's just like the right amount of believability mixed with stupidity.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. It's like you want to believe that at the very least that they hold themselves up to be like these very serious gangsters, and they continue to talk as serious gangsters no matter what dumb thing they are saying. Whereas like these guys are just buffoons, and it really, I think it speaks to the kind of like weakness of their storyline that like I've rewatched Sopranos 1,000 times. I completely forgot what happened to them, and I actually confuse what happened to them with what happens with little Jackie April, Jackie Jr.
Yep. Jackie Jr.
I thought, and that's in season 3, I believe. And it's like, it's like Jackie Jr. was the Sopranos writers trying to redo Matt and Sean. That's what it feels like.
So,
like, let's make it them less of these like dumbass characters and give some depth to them.
So my like conspiracy theory on this is, so this episode is 43 minutes. It's the shortest of the series.
Yeah.
And almost every storyline in this episode feels like it's missing a scene. Like the Matt Bevilacqua storyline feels like it's missing a scene where they would think it was a good idea to kill Christopher. The Jeannie Cusimano storyline feels like it's missing the change of heart scene. The leather jacket storyline feels like it's missing the moment, you know, where we understand what he's going for with the leather jacket. So like part of me wonders whether this episode was just too long and then they ended up having to like hack out a couple of key scenes.
Or it really feels to me like a collection of B stories with no A story whatsoever.
Yeah.
It feels like these are just like, okay, we can throw these into any episode and it's a viable B story and it'd be fun to watch. But it's kind of like, you know, you're more interested in what's going on, you know, with whatever the A story is. And in this case, it feels like there's no real A story, which is why the episode's name is Full Leather Jacket. It is literally, the episode is the jacket. That's what it is.
Yeah.
Well, that's the A story.
And it feels like they put in the attempted murder at the end to give it something, even though like it's not really set up, but you know, they just had to make it, they had to like force a B story into an A story by having it end with an attempted murder.
It makes you wonder how they write these episodes, you know, like with this show in particular, like, I mean, for sure, they do it like any other TV show in which, like, they know
that... You put your index cards on the corkboard, like everybody else,
Like everyone else. You gotta get the corkboard first. If you want to be a professional writer, buy a corkboard.
There's a nice corkboard you got here. It'd be a shame if somebody...
It'd be a shame if someone put a bunch of B stories unconnected to a viable A story on here.
It does feel like they knew that they had to shoot Chris, because Chris is shooting, I think it does, it's, you know, it needs, I don't know if it needs to happen, but it is something that, like, they, I could see them, you know, at the beginning of writing the season and plotting out all of the
Like, put up one card.
Yeah.
The shooting of Christopher Moltisanti, and we'll get to it.
Yeah. And then, like, when they were like, okay, we've used up every good A story, every viable one. And they're like, all right, all that's left, let's just throw them all in. We'll put the jacket in there. We'll put fucking, you know, Meadow wants to go to college in there. You know, we'll,
Christopher's going to propose.
Yeah. And I did love Chris proposing, by the way.
Yeah.
I was a huge fan of it because of the fact that it's like, that's, to me, is it was a very Sopranos proposal in that, like, it is a stupid guy proposing.
Adrian, the mom is great, too.
Yeah, the mother is fantastic. Adriana is great in that, you know, it's everyone is just, you know, and again, this is a kind of everyone is being an Italian stereotype times 20, but like it is still very it's very subtle and funny. I have a clip of that.
I'm dialing 911. Give me the phone.
Go in the other room.
Ow.
I want to marry you.
What?
I mean it, Adriana. I love you. I want to marry you. Got you a ring and everything.
I got you a ring and everything as a proposal is, I think that is a, that is
so
peak.
So romantic. I mean, I also...
After shoving your mom sharply, too.
Yeah, right. Yeah, shoving your mom, telling her, get the fuck out of here, as she threatens to call the cops.
Yeah,
and then I want to marry you, I got a ring.
I also assaulted my future mother-in-law right before I proposed. It's a traditional Italian way
of
proposing.
Yeah, exactly. It's like the most like Italian mobster trash way to, it's like, it's almost out of fucking West
Side
Story.
Get out of the way,
Story.
You old bag.
Yeah.
Just stealing her marble rye.
Yeah, steals her marble rye right
Give
before.
Give me the daughter, you old bag.
Yeah, but I did love that, and there was, you know, they set up Adriana and Chris, you know, kind of like Chris deciding that he is going to dedicate his life to, you know, being a middle management grifter for a for the mafia, and the fact that that gets spoiled by Matt and Sean, and so Matt and Sean have the idea of shooting Chris kind of out of nowhere, but I think based on a conversation they had with Richie Aprile when they were introduced to Richie. And Vince, do you have a clip of that?
I do, yeah.
Richie.
Danny.
Rich, this is Matthew Bevilacqua and Sean Gismonti. They're both from West Orange.
I'm back to using drink water.
It's fucking good to meet you, Richie. My cousin Louis Gismonti, he worked with me at the prison sign shop at East Jersey State.
Oh, yeah, Lou. 5'8", about 225.
I'm taking him over to my Uncle Joey's lot to look at IROX, and they asked if they could come by and say hello first.
You've been doing some things with Christopher Moltisanti, huh?
You know, this and that.
The attitude on that camel nose fuck. He ever lays his hand on my niece again, I'm gonna tear him apart piece by piece.
Camel nose? Man, you can't make that shit up.
What the fuck are you talking about? I just did. Did you ever notice he's the only motherfucker who can smoke a cigarette in the rain with his hands tied behind his back? That nose is a natural canopy.
So I like on a previous episode, was it Anna that, or no, it was Shireen.
Shireen.
Yeah, so brought up the fact that
Shireen Richie, has a theory.
She has a theory that Richie seems to be gay for Beansy. And then,
and not just gay for Beansy, but like that he is closet gay.
Yeah.
Wow. And, okay.
And it feels correct in this episode because, you know, Richie goes, the first thing he says about him is that he gives his height and his weight. And then there's also the scene where Furio comes to collect from, Chris and Matt, and he sees that they like have an apartment together where they sleep in bunk beds, and he like smells his underwear and says,
that scene is so good. I love that scene.
Yeah. But I mean the, you know, Richie, you know, saying, oh, right, Lou, like you've jogged my memory about Sean's cousin, Lou. He's 5'8" and he's about 225. Like, there's part of me that was just like, just knowing that, I don't know, it fits into her theory.
Right, and also, so does the fact that Matt and Jiz right? What's
Gizmata. Sean Gizmata.
Yeah. Sean, yeah. Sean and Matt. Like they betray Christopher to try and join Richie's crew, which so like they if they're gay for each other and they want to be part of the other.
Okay, well, but now you're adding
cases.
Wow, you're going deep. You're going deep on that.
You're going deep. Now you're adding Matt and Sean to the mix there, which is possible.
I mean, I didn't say it. Furio said it.
And then also, and I think very importantly, what does Richie want to do with a ramp? He wants to put one in Polly's ass and drive a Lionel through there. Yeah. Like, just the creativity of being like...
He wants to drive a Lionel train filled with fudge into another guy's ass.
Yeah, it's
that's
an interesting...
how you get the PhD in packing fudge. Yeah. You do that. That's your thesis. And my thesis, I put a train into a guy's ass, and I'm a PhD.
Well, yeah, it's definitely like, you know, the things add up. It's one of my favorite fan theories of The Sopranos that Richie is closet gay.
I got my MFP.
I never heard that. I like that.
Yeah.
My master's of fudge packing.
So this so stupid. So and that is just that conversation you know with Richie is what drove Matt and Sean to decide to try.
Well, they also have that other conversation and scene that I really like where they're sitting in the Bing and they're like what do we do, like look at us, we're pathetic.
Yeah
Where a tit I actually really like that scene
where a tit is literally like the foreground of the scene where it's just like it's like a zoomed in tit and then it zooms in on their faces.
And you know I do
and
love
they're sitting there with naked women dancing around them and they're trying to figure out how to impress guys.
That's a good point. But they're also, you know, he's like, you know, what are we doing? I got my fucking stockbroker's license.
It's and like that scene where George and Jerry are like, we're not men. No, we're not men. Like, where they're like, we need to make some changes. We need to make some fucking changes.
I'm telling you, dude, this is the most Seinfeld episode of this show. It really is. And you know, I love Seinfeld. I'm not talking shit. It's a great show. It's a show about nothing. But this is a show about something. And the fact that it just kind of like seemed to meander from one kind of B story to another without really ever like congealing into maybe an
full,
episode that could
a full regot into, pie
into congealing into a full regot.
Yeah.
That it was just a problem that I had and them shooting Chris. And then, of course, Sean getting killed in that interchange.
That's a great scene.
It is a great scene because of the fact that what I love about it is Sean gets killed and then he just yells jizz, which is, you know,
again,
fits into your new theory that they are also gay. Then also runs over to Richie to tell him like we're with you now.
Right.
Which is a ridiculous assumption because, you know, you can't just fucking kill, you know, a guy who's mobbed up. I mean, Chris wasn't made yet, but killing him and then trying to like hide behind Richie was, I thought that's maybe one of the best parts of it. The fact that like he just immediately is like, get out of here before I fucking kill you.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that was clearly a stupid move. Also, did you recognize why Jizz died in that scene?
He gets shot in the head.
Yes. But he was trying to get his seatbelt off. And in the previous episode, Livia tells the horror story about like the kids who died because they trapped in their car and they couldn't get their seatbelt off. So like,
oh wow,
was that a callback? I don't know.
That's very good, Vince. This is, I gotta say, that's too good for this podcast.
I kind of hate fan theories, but I don't know. Yeah.
If you want shit like that, go to any other podcast. But here we talk about this show because it has titties and because it has guns. Those are the things we like, and a lot of good regat pies.
I really liked Chrissy's ankle rig. Speaking of guns.
Oh, yeah. That was nice.
He pulls out the ankle piece on him.
Yeah, you got to have that ankle piece ready for when you're shot.
You got to have that ankle rig, baby. You don't know.
When you're shot in the middle of the street and you're down, you got to reach for a gun, get yourself a good ankle rig. All right, and now just real quick, it is time for our segment. It's the 90s.
Hell yeah.
It's the 90s. Parents are supposed to discuss sex with their children. It's the 90s. It's the 90s. 90s.
Hell yeah.
Hell yeah.
I mostly do this segment because I like that fucking bumper so much. Just real quick, a couple of 90s things that I noticed about this, because although the show is now in the 2000s, the production happened in the 90s. It's still a 90s show.
It's before 9/11, spiritually.
Yeah.
Anything, anything 90s. Before 9/11, that's 90s, which means that we're going to get all the way to like season four and still call the show 90s. The two things
Americans
I noticed.
Americans were still largely content with the nation's directions at this point.
Right,
that's very true. Which means they were content.
Gore and Bush fellow, I have good. I feel good about this.
This should be a good and fair election. Nothing untoward will happen.
Yeah. I like these gentlemen. Two good gentlemen.
Both are good options.
I'm going to take a big sip of coffee before I count these ballots.
So the 90s things I noticed is one was at one point Meadow yells at her mother, "I'm sorry, you could have just paged me," which is very 90s. Yeah. And then also, I don't know if you guys caught it, but in the jacket scene, the very opening of the scene, the grift that they are discussing is that Richie and Junior are running a pirated DVD scam.
Yeah.
It's just very random. And like the scene opens with Junior telling Tony, this guy, he got The Mummy before it was even out in theaters.
Yeah, like a flex. We had The Mummy 2 months before theatrical release, Tom.
Yeah, yeah. You could watch The Mummy from the comfort of your own home.
Hey, not for nothing. I think this Brendan Fraser is going to be a big star.
I like this kid.
I'm sure nothing untoward will happen to his career. I mean, not that anything really bad happened other than, like, I think he got divorced and it made him go a little crazy. Sure. Shout out to Brendan Fraser. Come on the pod. We know you listen. Other than that, didn't notice too much else that was very 90s about this one. What about you, Vince?
No, yeah, that's, we got that. That's about it.
And in terms of Gabba Vafango, I didn't hear any new Italian slang in this one. Did you?
No, I mean, other than the rigotte pie, I mean, every time Matt Bevilacqua talks, I can barely understand what he's saying. He might have had something in there that I just missed because he has marbles in his mouth. But
he
no,
does.
I did not. I didn't hear too much.
There's actually a really funny moment where Richie brings the tripe and tomatoes to Carm.
Right.
Yeah.
And he's like, we're probably the only two left that like the tripe. And he kind of does like making fun of an old school Italian, saying tripe or something.
Yeah.
Yeah. A tripe. Because
he knows it's like super old school to like the tripe.
Yeah, yeah. Tripe is, that's something that only, you know, old Italians from the old
that's
country.
That's some classic
like.
Shit. Tripe and tomatoes.
Have you had tripe and tomatoes? You're the food podcast.
Oh, yeah, I sure have. It's really good.
I never have. I've not had tripe and tomatoes. I've had like the Mexican version, but I've never had Italian tripe. It looks fucking
it's like,
terrible.
I think it's like braised, so it's super tender. Okay. At least the way I had it.
Well, that sounds delicious.
You gotta
God
like soak the tripe in the milk or something
yes.
so it doesn't.
Yeah, for know. Sure. Yeah, you gotta get the shit out of there.
Yeah, you gotta unpack the fudge from the tripe.
Yeah, it's so weird. I got the intestines. There was a fucking model train in here. I don't know what happened.
Who put a Lionel in my tripe?
The Lionel in my fucking tripe.
Oh my God. Yeah. In general. I think I can say that this is one of those episodes that you watch and you go like, oh, all right, well, can't wait for next week.
Yeah,
I mean, it ends with Chris, in a hospital bed and Tony saying the lines, how could this happen? Which, by the way, another kind of, I got to say, again, this is a weird thing to say. What do you mean, how could this? You're in the mafia.
You're right. In the mafia, sir.
Like I have a pretty good idea how this could happen. Like the look that he has of just like, how could this like anything else?
A guy who's just already like, survived his own attempted whacking.
Yeah,
right, exactly.
It's just so strange to me because you just like you could have given him any line at all. You could have given him just like
yeah, if I find out who does this, to the moon, come. but how could this happen? It felt like overdramatic and just kind of, I don't know, just lazy
in the manner of most of this episode. This episode feels weirdly broad in a way that The Sopranos usually does not.
They like all really wanted to go to lunch, and they're like, "All right, let's just finish up episode 8, and then we'll get lunch." So that's fine. Yeah, that's good. That's good.
My tripe's getting cold.
Yeah, let's go.
Or warm? I don't know. Do they eat it cold or warm?
Oh, I just don't eat a cold fish. I'm someone who microwaves everything. Just microwave that tripe.
Tripe is intestines, not fish.
What?
Tripe.
That's not a type of fish?
No. It's the stomach lining.
Oh, my God.
It's intestines.
Oh, well, now I know.
It's my train joke.
No, it makes sense, but I thought maybe that there was a train inside of the fish. Listen.
No, it's in the intestines because it went up his asshole.
All right, listen. I don't know anything about food. You guys can talk about food. I don't know anything about food.
We gotta give this guy some tripe and tomatoes over here. He hasn't lived.
I don't know anything about food. Gabagool! Anyways, in general, I thought I'm very excited for the next episode. While this may have been a not so good episode of The Sopranos, I have to say this has been a fantastic episode of Pod Yourself a Gun. Carl Hess, thank you so much for coming on the show.
Thank you, guys. This was a real pleasure.
I'm glad. We'd love to have you back. You are also a big Sopranos fan.
I've watched it more than any other show. Yeah, I'm always ready to talk Sopranos.
Hell yeah. And where can people find you online?
I'm just at Carl Hess on Twitter and Instagram. That's KARLHESS. And my podcast is at YapPod on Instagram. That's YAPPOD.
Yelling About Pate. Mm-hmm. You should listen to it. It is a great show.
Why do you guys
yelling about tripa?
Why do you guys have to yell about the pate? That seems like more something that you would discuss sotto voce.
Oh, no. We get really excited. The yelling. That's where the yelling comes from. Kind of like this.
Sure.
Yeah. I'm excited about two things, Sopranos and pate. That's a good
cross section. Trains in the ass and intestinal cuisine.
I'm glad I learned about tripe. And
there
now,
you go.
Look,
I'm going to go.
I want to train in my ass and intestines in my mouth. I'm a guy who likes simple things.
Is that so much to ask? Is that so much of fucking ass?
Email us, frotcast@gmail.com. That's frotcast@gmail.com. Patreon.com/frotcast. That is our Patreon for our main show, the Film Drunk Frotcast, which you can check out the same place you're checking out this show. Vince, what is the Google Voice number?
415-275-0030.
All right. Thank you so much for listening, everyone. And until next time, don't stop believing. Hold on. Let me just make sure my level is good. Yo, what up? Fuck yeah, bitch. Hell yeah. All right. I'm good. I'm ready. I'm ready to rock when you are.
I'm ready.
As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search. Match. With Indeed, when I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, excursions, and more in one place. There are over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from, so you can find something for everyone. And Viator offers free cancellation and 24/7 customer support for worry-free travel. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.